Good morning in the morning, everyone. Welcome to the very first episode of the Off the Cuff Podcast, a show that is 50% podcast, 50% game show, but 100% real. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Richard Lando, and I'd like to tell you all about the rules of how this show is going to work. So essentially, if you don't know, the term off the cuff is an idiom that means without preparation. So everything you hear on this show is going to be completely without preparation. I have here with me a hat full of topics. All these topics have been submitted by various friends, family members, and in future episodes, they're going to be submitted by listeners like you. So I'm really excited for that. Essentially, inside of this hat are all these topics, and I have no idea what I am going to grab. What I do is I pick one, and I start a timer. I have 10 minutes to talk about that topic and anything that relates to that topic and anything that comes to mind about it. I can't veer away from the topic, and I can't skip any. Whatever I pick, that's what's going to go. So, like I said, I have a timer here. I am allowed to use the internet, but only for one purpose. If I pick a topic and I don't know the definition of a word, or I just have no idea what that topic is, I still got to work with it. But I can look up what it means or what it is or something about it so I have some context. Otherwise, if I know something about a topic, we're going to keep going. In this first episode, we're going to be doing 5 topics, 10 minutes apiece. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the very first episode of the Off the Cuff Podcast. All right, here it goes. Getting the timer ready. Why do people actually respect people when they die? Wow, we're getting deep right off the bat. All right, let's do it. So timer has begun. Why do people actually respect people when they die? I guess I can kind of understand that a little bit. I know that I've had people, friends, family members that weren't exactly the greatest human beings during the time that they were alive pass away. It happens to the best of us, to everyone, actually. And suddenly, when this person that lived a completely terrible life, or maybe even a criminal life in some cases, when they die, they're immediately respected. And I kind of get what's being said here. It's like all of a sudden, this person that was a terrible father, or a huge criminal, or a terrible husband, is suddenly the best husband in the world, the world's best father, you know, the most wholehearted person when spoken about at the funeral, or when regarded in memory. I think the reason that people view this person with so much respect is because they feel like they've lost something. I think there's a really interesting truth about that. How people feel when another person dies is solely, in my opinion, solely contingent on the relationship that that person had with them when they died. So here's what I mean by that. I had an uncle, and he died from cancer. He wasn't exactly the greatest uncle in the world. He absolutely beat several of my cousins growing up to a pulp in some cases, hospitalizing two of them, and was definitely very unkind to not only his own wife, but to the sisters of his wife, which were my mother and my other aunties, abusing them verbally and in some cases physically. He definitely wasn't what we would describe as the greatest human being in the world. And when he died, that entire side of the family seemed to just shift. And when they would talk about him, Thanksgiving, Christmas, anything like that, they would mention him like, oh, he was the greatest father that anyone could ask for. He was the most loving husband. And from our perspective, that's definitely not what we saw. I think the relationship that somebody has with a person greatly affects them when that person's deceased, when that person's gone. We, as family members, but outsiders to what was happening in that home, we could see him for what he was. The cousins and my aunt that was married to him, they saw him through a completely different lens. You know, my cousin saw him as dad. And I think on some level, every kid wants to believe that they have the best parents. And as time goes on, that viewpoint changes. We understand that our parents are real people, just like us. They've made mistakes. When they had kids, they also had no idea what was happening or what they were going to do. And they kind of just learned as they went. So yeah, it would make sense that they saw him through this lens of putting a parent or a father on a pedestal. And it would make sense that my aunt saw him through this lens of, oh, that's the love of my life. That's my high school sweetheart. It's my husband. It's the father of my children. So there would be a sort of rose-colored glasses that they would look at him through. And I'm sure when he was deceased, they only saw and remembered the good things. They didn't so much remember the bad things. But those of us in the family that had a totally different relationship with him, well, we definitely saw him as not a very good person. And it's interesting to think about because I don't think there is actually a shift when people die. Like there's this change of like, oh, the person's dead. Boom. I immediately respect them and I immediately have to revere them and everything they did in their life. I really don't think that happens. I think that death in another person, especially with the people that are living and mourning that now gone loved one, it just brings out the base nature of whatever the relationship with that person was. You know, when my cousins first met my uncle, it was dad, right? The uncle held them as a child, and that was the first thing they knew about him. That was the base of the relationship. That's where that started. Yes, you can pile a bunch of different things on top of that throughout the years, good moments, bad moments, but the fundamental basis of it is that they were his dad, or he was their dad, rather. And it makes sense that death would kind of take all of that compilation of experiences off of a person and just bring it back to basics. I know there's a very similar concept that's spoken about in a TV show, and the TV show is called How I Met Your Mother, and they call it graduation goggles. Basically, when they're about to break up with someone, they describe this moment of like, oh, but suddenly you don't see their flaws as much. Suddenly you feel like, wow, I'm really gonna miss this person. We had some great times just before you're about to break up with them. And they call it graduation goggles because it's kind of that same sort of thing that happens when you graduate high school. It's 4 years of whatever you experienced. Some people had a great experience in high school. Personally, from speaking through many people, I have found that most people did not enjoy their high school experience, which is the way it goes. It's high school. You know, it's 4 years of whatever you go through. Bullies, bad grades, stress, drugs or partying in some people's cases, different relationships, like whatever it is. It's 4 years of that. And then on graduation day, you're about to leave and you're like, man, I'm going to miss these people. But then 6 months later, you look back and I'm like, yeah, no, I definitely don't miss any of those people. So they call it graduation goggles. It's the same thing that happens when, you know, you're about to break up with someone. And in my opinion, in a weird way, it's kind of the same thing that happens when someone dies, especially someone that wasn't a very good person in their lifetime. Now, this is totally different for someone that lived a great life. You know, I'm sure people were devastated by the death of Mother Teresa. She touched very many people, and I don't think anyone would say that she was a bad person. I think that's genuine. But these graduation goggles that kind of come on to this person when another person dies, especially if they lived a terrible life, well, that occurs because they're taking away all of this, all of these layers of bad experiences and just going back to the basics of the relationship. It's like the basics of a relationship is almost seen through these sort of graduation goggles. They get kind of wistful, like they're gonna miss this person, that things are gonna be different now that they're gone. And of course, this is a very specific scenario. This is a very specific question that is asked here. Why do people actually respect people when they die? It can be very frustrating to look at another person that didn't live a very good life and watch the people around them revere them as if they were some hero when you know that they weren't. And we've seen that everywhere. We see that in movies. We see that in TV shows. We see it in real life. Not everyone is a saint. Not everyone is the devil either. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to be respected when they're gone. It's kind of a sad thing, but it's true, in my opinion. If someone didn't do something worthwhile in their life, oftentimes they're not even going to be remembered. I remember reading a statistic many years ago. I don't even remember where I read it. Maybe it was the internet. Who knows? But it basically said that 90% of the population will not be remembered 10 years after their death. That's a big number. And again, I'm not even sure if it's true, but it would make sense. Like, who really remembers you if you're not some giant celebrity or some world leader or someone like Mother Teresa or Gandhi who sparked great civil change in the world? I think it's just going to be your direct family members. Yeah, you know what? I think that's why people respect people when they die. Because deep down, we do really know. We know that the only people that are really going to remember this person are going to be their direct family, their immediate friends. And in some level, oh, there's the timer. And on some level, everybody wants to be remembered. All right. What an interesting first topic, going right into the deep, dark delves of the world. All right, let's move on to topic two, everybody. Let's see how that goes. I also didn't think that was too bad. I thought we got introspective in there. It's some good stuff. All right, let's see. Next topic. Let's see it. What is your biggest cooking disaster? So I have a couple stories for this one, but I think it'll be good overall. So what is my biggest cooking disaster? So we'll start with a first kind of lighter one, and then we'll go into a little bit of a heavier one. But you need to know right now that I can only make a handful of dishes. One of those is tea. Another one of those is ramen. And that is the extent of my cooking ability. I can also use the microwave very well and an air fryer. Again, that is the extent of my cooking ability. Anyway, when I was 14 years old, my younger brother and my cousin were staying the night at our house one weekend. And my mom, dad, and uncle had all gone to various shopping malls to go Christmas shopping, essentially. So they left me in charge alone with my younger brother and my cousin, who were 5 years apart. So they would have been 9 or 10 at the time. Again, I was 14. And I decided, okay, it's a Sunday morning. I'm going to make them pancakes. We have pancake mix. I keep eyeballing it as I walk by into my perpetual boredom trips to the pantry. Because let's be real, we really all go to the pantry, not because we're hungry. It's because we're bored. Pantry or fridge. And I know that I was like, okay, I can totally follow the directions and make pancake mix or make pancakes. I can do this. So I get all the ingredients together. I tell them, oh, I'm going to make you guys pancakes. It's going to be great. And they're like, yeah, pancakes. They're all excited. My brother's a little doubtful because he knows that I have zero ability to cook, but my cousin's all excited. And I was like, oh, I'm going to prove him wrong. I got this. I can do this. Get all the ingredients together, cook them all up, and then I turn the pan on. Now, I didn't know that you're supposed to cook pancakes at a low heat. I really didn't. I honest to God thought that if you just put the heat of the pan on high and you left it there, then it would cook faster and you could just whip through pancakes really, really quickly. For those of you that don't know that is not the case. Cook them on low heat. Oh my God. And so I have this on high heat and I'm pouring the pancakes down and they're burning before I even put down the like cup that I have that has the pancake mix to pour it into the pan. They're burning before I can even put that cup down, pick up the spatula with that same hand and try and flip them over. Like, it's just happening so fast. And I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? And so I went through as many as I could trying to not burn any or trying to salvage what I could of some of them and being like, okay, there's so much pancake mix here. I have like 2 liters worth of pancake mix. Like, I should totally be able to do this. I can totally do this. And so I'm finally going through all of them. And I completely exhaust my 2 liters worth of pancake mix in this giant jug that I had. And I was like, there's no way. I ran out of attempts. I must have made like 16 pancakes. I was like, what is this? So anyway, I call my brother with my head hanging low. In total, guys, I made 16 pancakes. Of those 16 pancakes, I burned 15 of the one that I didn't burn, my cousin said, it didn't completely make him want to throw up. I see this as a complete and total win. Name that movie quote. I see this as a complete and total win. Anyway, yeah, I think that was a pretty bad cooking disaster. Burning 15 of the 16 pancakes in my attempt to make food for my cousin and brother. But luckily, my parents came to the door like 30 minutes later and they brought food back home with them. So that was a good save to the day. But of my biggest cooking disasters, that was a second. The first, this one's a doozy. This one's going to get you. Okay. So I was with one of my exes at the time. And this ex and I decided that we wanted to spend New Year's kind of on our own, you know? So we both pitched in to get ourselves kind of a nicer Airbnb. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. This will be good. It'll be like a fun New Year's night in. Like, we'll drink champagne. We'll watch the ball drop together. I can cook her dinner. We'll have our own space. This will be awesome. This will be great. It'll be a great New Year's just for us two. And so I ask her, hey, what's your favorite meal? Like, what would you like for me to cook for you? And she goes, well, I love steak and asparagus. And I was like, all right, that's very specific. But sure, I can learn how to cook a steak. Mind you, the pancake story that I just told you previous, that is the entirety of my cooking experience. I mean, I worked at In-N-Out for 4 years, but that is very different. There is a science to how all that is made, and you don't really need to know how to cook to make that go right. But anyway, that is the entirety of my home cooking experience, besides those years at In-N-Out Burger, which I do not count. And okay, I guess I kind of count it. I can make a burger. That I can do. Not as well as In-N-Out can, but I do know how to make a burger. Anyway, I digress. So I'm studying in the days that are leading up to this New Year's Eve weekend. And I'm like, okay, I know everything about steaks. I learned from the best. I watched all of Gordon Ramsay's YouTube videos. I watched every YouTube video I could find about cooking a steak, the cut, the type of salt that you use, like how long it stayed on the grill, what you use for the butter, the thyme and the rosemary that you put in there, the little basting technique when you like tilt the pan over and you let the butter melt and you just baste it with the spoon and let it cook in there. Yeah, I learned everything about how to make a goddamn fucking steak, okay? And so the day comes. Did I practice? No. The day comes, and we're sitting there inside of this beautiful Airbnb where we have the New Year's Eve movie marathon going on I don't even remember what channel. I just know that Harry Potter was playing, and I was like, I'm with it. And I'm like, okay, darling, I am going to cook you a steak dinner. And she's like, yay, oh my God. She's like so excited, right? She's like, you learned how to cook steak. And I was like, I learned how to cook steak. Mind you, I've only studied the professor of YouTube. Under Professor YouTube's tutelage, I have not actually done any practice. So I take this steak, I gather all the ingredients prior, and I lay everything out, and I take this steak, and I remember one thing Gordon Ramsay said in one of his videos. He said, you cannot take the steak off once you initially put it on the grill or on the pan, whatever you're using to cook it with. You need to make sure it gets a good sear. The sear is one of the most important parts. And I was like, all right. I will make sure the steak gets a good sear. Little did I know the chaos and mayhem that would ensue from me trying to get a good sear on a goddamn steak. So I put the steak down. I may have put a little too much butter initially in the pan because I put the steak down and immediately it just starts smoking. And there's just like all this smoke. And I turn the fan on inside this Airbnb. And it's not doing anything. It's like I've lit a fire inside of the kitchen. There's just so much smoke. And my girlfriend at the time, she comes up to me. She goes, Richard, take it off. And I was like, no, it has to get a good sear. It has to get a good sear. She goes, take off the steak. Turn off. I was like, no, we only have one chance. I'm getting a good sear. I'm getting a good sear. Like, I'm like coughing and crying all through this smoke. It's like I need like a fireman's gas mask and we need people to carry us through this. Think of the Spider-Man scene where in the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, when he first meets the Green Goblin. In that fire scene where he's like coughing and dying, that, think of that much smoke, okay? I may be exaggerating a little bit, but this is for dramatic effect. Do not judge me. Anyway, there's a ton of smoke, is what I'm trying to get at. And finally, she opens the door and the windows and she's like fanning the house with the front door of the house. And I have like, you know, like towels and I'm like swinging around the fire alarms because I don't want them to go off and alert the fire department. I'm like, dang. We're gonna get in so much trouble for this. This is gonna cost so much money. And so finally, I finished the steak. And actually, it came out great. I realized that the mistake that I had made was that I definitely put way too much butter in that pan for way too long. But here's the thing. We sit down, and she's sitting in front of me eating the steak, and I'm like, how is it? And she goes, why on earth didn't you take it off the pan? And I was like, because Gordon Ramsay said, you do not take it off the pan when you sear it. You make sure that it's seared properly. You do not take the steak off of it. And hey, it paid off, right? Look how great it tastes. And she looks at me and says, if you ever tell me one more time that you are listening to Gordon Ramsay over the advice of your immediate girlfriend, I swear to God, I will leave you. And the funny thing is, she was being dead serious. She was so mad at me. It was probably one of the funniest experiences that I've ever had cooking. But the steak came out great, so I win. Wow, look how perfect that timing was. Okay, I know that you can't hear the timer. Oh, there it is. There we go. The timer literally went off as I finished that last sentence during that slight pause there. But for some reason, the actual noise didn't go off. But that's okay. I have my phone here in front of me, and that's what I'm using as a timer. Anyway, yeah, that answers that question. Biggest cooking mistakes. Anyway, let's move on to the next topic, shall we, guys? Yeah. Oh, I know. We're having fun. All right, let's get this timer ready. Okay, next topic. What is your favorite quote from a movie? Nice. That's a great one. Okay, start. All right, I have a couple favorite movie quotes, a couple different things. I actually am very guilty of speaking in movie quotes, and I don't know if you guys have ever done this, where you quote a movie or a TV show, and you do it so subtly and so perfectly in a conversation that it goes unnoticed, so much so to the point that a person actually thinks that that is your original quote, that you just originated that comment. Oh, man. Those are the best wins. They really are. All right. Anyway, so let's start with some great movie quotes. So one of the first ones that comes to mind is from a movie called The Bucket List with Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson. And if you haven't seen it, a very quick synopsis of it is basically Morgan Freeman is a poorer individual. He's a mechanic. He lives, you know, paycheck to paycheck, but he provides for his family just fine. And he's, like, incredibly smart, but he gets diagnosed with cancer. Jack Nicholson is, like, a huge millionaire person because he owns, like, the biggest hospital in the area that they live in that's never really specified. And he also gets cancer, and both of them are terminal. They get put in the same room, and they basically befriend each other, and they come up with this idea of creating a bucket list, doing everything that they want to do in their lives before they kick the bucket. And Jack Nicholson offers, he says, hey, I have the money, so let's just do whatever. I'll pay for everything. So the whole movie is essentially that. It's their adventure of creating a combined bucket list and both of them going and doing these adventures together, various things. And it's a really great movie. And there's a quote in the beginning of the movie when Morgan Freeman is told his cancer diagnosis. And the quote goes something like this. I remember reading early on that 96% of people, when asked in a survey, would not want to know the exact date of their death. I, for one, always lean towards the 4% because it would be nice to know exactly how much time I have to work with. But after being told, well, I'm thinking the 96% knew something that I didn't. End quote. So that's the quote from the movie. I might have butchered a couple words here and there, but that's more or less the concept of what it is. And I really love that quote. Because it's true. For those of you that don't know, when I was younger, I actually had cancer. I had a stage 4 Wilms tumor in my left kidney. 2 years of chemo, 7 sessions of radiation, 7 blood transfusions. So that whole world is very real to me. And honestly, I kind of agree with Morgan Freeman on that quote in the sense that if I was told, hey, this is exactly how much time you're going to have to work with, I would want to know the exact date of my death, for sure. I would like to know exactly how much time I have to work with, like I really do. Being told that number and having that mindset before being told that exact number or date, two very different concepts. You know, I was given 3 weeks to live at a certain point. Like, after everything that's happened, I still do feel that I would genuinely want to know the exact date because I have known the exact date and it didn't exactly work out that way. It's been a lot longer than 3 weeks since I turned 4. But I do love that quote just because it has a lot of reality with me. I align with it a lot, and it's a fantastic movie. God, highly recommend it. What else? I have a couple other favorite movie quotes. Oh, the classic from The Social Network, Andrew Garfield and Mark Zuckerberg. Well, it's Jesse Eisenberg playing Mark Zuckerberg, and then Andrew Garfield playing Eduardo Saverin. For those of you that haven't seen The Social Network, it's the story of Mark Zuckerberg and how he created Facebook. The accuracy of it is in question, but it's a fantastic movie. And basically, in this scene, Andrew Garfield, his character, and Jesse Eisenberg, they're best friends. Jesse Eisenberg plays Mark Zuckerberg, and he has sort of slyly pushed out his best friend from the company and sort of kind of kicked him out of Facebook under his nose after Facebook became this huge success. So basically, it lost him out of a lot of money, and it kicked him out of the company. A lot made him lose opportunity to even lose money in the future. It was like this really big backstab that was like pretty much the main point of contention of the movie. And you just see Andrew Garfield talking to one of the lawyers, reading over paperwork, when he realizes what's happening. And he busts out of that room and he starts going towards Mark. And Mark's on the computer and he's doing something called, they call it being wired in. I don't actually know exactly what it is. I don't know if it's like software coding or what, but basically if someone's wired in throughout the entirety of the movie, they don't even so much as roughly disturb them. Like they leave them completely alone. It's like you're not supposed to talk to them or even acknowledge their existence. They're wired in. They're on a computer with headphones, and I have no idea what they're actually doing. But Andrew Garfield runs over to him, and, you know, he says, "Mark, Mark." And another person says, "He's wired in." He's, "Oh, sorry? He's wired in. Oh, is he wired in?" And Andrew Garfield just takes his computer and slams it down in front of him. "How about now? Are you wired in?" He goes, "You issued 24 million new shares of stock. How much of his shares were diluted? How much were mine?" And there's some discussion about this. And then finally, he says, "Is this because I froze the account?" And another character named Sean Parker says, "You think we were going to let you parade around in your fancy suits, walking around like you own the place?" And then the best quote in the whole movie, Andrew Garfield turns to him and says, "Sorry, the rest of my clothes were at the cleaners, along with my hoodie and my fuck you flip-flops, you pretentious douchebag." And the way he says it is just so perfect. And the quote is so funny because it's one of those insults that's done so off the cuff that it was just beautifully created. And I was like, I love this. And the way Andrew Garfield portrays the anger of Eduardo Saverin for kicking him out, for having Mark Zuckerberg kick him out of the company in that single moment was just, it was beautiful. It was amazing. Anyway, if you haven't seen that movie, highly recommend that one as well. Another favorite quote of mine from an amazing movie. There's a movie, I don't know, maybe you guys have heard of it, maybe you guys haven't. It's called Avengers Endgame. It's basically, this is going to sound weird, but it honestly is one of my favorite quotes in the movie. It's the quote when Wanda encounters Thanos when they're in the middle of the big battle, and she just comes up in front of him and she says, "You took everything from me." And Thanos says, "I don't even know who you are." And she says, "You will." Just the amount of emotion in those two lines. Like, the character of Wanda Maximoff in The Scarlet Witch, first, incredible story in the MCU universe, but also huge celebrity crush of mine, not gonna lie. I think Elizabeth Olsen is incredibly beautiful and definitely have a huge crush on her, but she plays the character so well, all my bias aside, and just that moment when she slams down in front of Thanos and she's just like, "You took everything from me," like, that hit me so hard, and I was like, whoa, like, dang, Thanos, like, you really took everything from her, like, and of course, like, she lost Vision, like, Thanos killed him so he could get the Mind Stone, and I totally get what was happening there, but just the delivery of that quote, and, like, how much it hit, and I've watched that movie well over a dozen times, and I watched it with friends and family, and everybody does make some sort of comment about that quote, like, "Oh, man, she's mad." Like, it affects people. It's a powerful quote, you know? And that, in my personal opinion, is what makes quotes from people so great, is that the effect that they can have on another person, especially a person who doesn't understand what's happening in that other person's universe. Like, none of us know what it's like to have superpowers and lose, you know, an incredibly advanced AI that was built by one of the most, you know, the smartest Avengers in the entire MCU. Like, of course, we don't know that specific, but we do know what it feels like to lose a person. And that's enough of an alignment to be. And just so when she says that quote, like, "You took everything from me," like, whoa. Like, I felt like I've lost things for sure, but I don't think I've ever looked at anyone and been like, you took everything from me. Like, everything? God damn. And it just hits so well. And yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes in that movie, oddly enough. Also, Captain America's speech, the "This is the fight of our lives." That's right before they go into the time machine. I think it's great. Excellent. All right. How are we doing, guys? We feeling good over there? I'm feeling pretty good over here. This is going a lot better than I had personally anticipated. But we got this. That was topic number 3. We're about to jump into topic number 4 right now, and we are killing it. We're doing well. Hope y'all are having fun, because I'm having a great time. All right, so number 4. What activity has made you feel most alive? Oh, all right. start the timer. Wow. What activity has made you feel most alive? There have been a few times in my life where I felt genuinely alive. You know, those moments where you're just exhilarated and you're standing tall, you're standing up straight, your eyes are super wide, and it's like you're almost not blinking. Like you're taking everything in around you and you're breathing so beautifully. Like just the air in your lungs is just completely filling and completely draining with each breath. Like you almost feel like tingly in a way, you know? You almost feel like Spider-Man. Like I know everybody has had some type of moment like that or some type of feeling where you're just alive. You're like, damn, this is real. And I've only had a few select moments of that. And I wish that others have that every day. I wish that for everyone every day, because that is an incredible feeling that honestly cannot be replicated too well. But of these moments, there's been a couple of them. First one, and this is so strange because it's so random, but it's true. It was the middle of the pandemic, and the world had been shut down for about 7 months already. And it was about at that time in my particular city that restrictions were starting to somewhat loosen up, in the sense that you could go outside now, you know, wearing the masks, and there were certain businesses that were allowed to, you know, refuse people to enter, or they were still doing delivery only. And I was like, okay, fine. So I took that time to become one with nature. And I started going on hikes, which is not something like I normally ever used to do. Like if you ask any one of my friends or family, like, hey, is Richard a hiking person? Like, would you ever catch Richard on a hike? They'd probably look at you and be like, no, like Richard hiking? Come on. And so it was very out of character for me. And so not only did I decide to hike, but I decided to do a barefoot hike. You know, I'd read different things at the time about like grounding and putting your feet against the ground and, you know, feeling the energy from the earth or whatever people call it. I honestly still don't understand exactly what that is, but I do know one thing. I tried doing this barefoot walk, and I went on a barefoot hike for 5 miles. I didn't even realize it was 5 miles. Like, at a certain point, I was just, like, jamming. Like, for my musicians out there, you ever get to a point, or even my artists in general, you ever get to a point where you're doing your art, whether you're playing the guitar, playing the piano, or you're, like, drawing a picture, and you're just, like, in the zone. Like, you're jamming. You know, like you are in the flow state, as some people call it, right? I didn't know I could reach that point, like physically doing something like hiking. It was an interesting feeling. It was the first time I'd felt that not doing an art. And I thought that that sort of thing was limited to the arts, interestingly enough. But it's limited to so many, but it's not limited at all. It is unlimited to any aspect of life. You can be in that state. You can just be jamming, you know, in that flow state, doing anything. It's kind of incredible, actually. And yeah, I was just jamming. I was like on this hike, like my feet weren't hurting, my body felt amazing. And I'm sure that was a mixture of a lot of things, you know. I was just incarcerated inside my own home for the past 7 months, as everyone else was. But like, yeah, I was outside, and I get to the end of this hike, and I get to the end of the trail, and I'm like, oh wow, that's the end of the trail. I loop back around. Wow, that was 5 miles. Jesus. And I look at my feet, they look fine. I mean, they're dirty, but they look fine. It's not like they were bleeding or hurt or anything. And then I started to feel like alive. Like, I don't know how else to explain it other than that. I started to feel alive. Like, I could breathe better than I'd ever breathed. I took a drink of my water, and it tasted like sweet, pure nectar. Like, I know that sounds odd, but that's the honest to God truth. And I was looking up at the world around me, and I was looking up at the sky, and my eyes felt super wide, and like, it's like I couldn't close them. They felt free, like they were locked in some way before. It was interesting. And I felt my body just like surge with so much energy at the end of a 5 mile barefoot hike. And I just started running. Like, I like dropped my bottle, and I dropped my phone and my wallet, and I just took off, like just running. And I just ran off the trail into a part of the off part of the trail. And like, there were bushes and there were trees, and I was jumping around. Like, I was doing little somersaults. I was doing cartwheels. Like,
I can't really do a backflip, but I'm sure if I tried in that moment, I probably would have been able to. I'm just kidding. I don't know if that's actually true at all, but I'm trying to give you a picture of what I was feeling and what I was doing. Like, I was just running around, like just making my body do all these, you know, oddly gymnastic type things, you know, in a single moment. Like, I felt alive. It was really interesting, you know. I was doing cartwheels, somersaults, all this stuff, just kind of jumping up and down, just like doing crazy things, dancing, like, and I felt like I had more energy than I ever had, ever. I felt alive. Yeah, that was probably one of the first times I had ever felt alive. Another activity specifically that makes me feel alive is performing. You know, I love to play guitar. I love to play harmonica. You know, I write music. I like singing. I like to freestyle. Whether that's hip hop or whether that's just getting four chords from people randomly and just making a song up out of it from a random song topic. And taking that to the stage is something that does something to me that I can't quite explain. And I would equate it to that, feeling alive. It's like there's a moment when I get up on that stage and, you know, I'm playing a song or, you know, I'm creating something off the cuff. And I'm going through this moment of creation. I'm sharing it with this crowd in front of me. And like, I just feel alive. Like, this is in the middle of actually playing, like in the middle of actually performing the art and putting the music out there and connecting with everyone in the audience. Like, I'm sure other people that play music can speak to this thing, but there's an intimate connection that happens when you're performing a piece of music for a crowd. And it's like you look at all the various faces in the crowd, no matter how big or small, and you're connecting with all. Like, it's the strangest thing. I don't know if I can really put it to words, but the best way I can try and describe it is that it's almost like you've created this network of communication with everyone in the crowd. And it's like there's this surge of just flowing communication going back and forth between everyone. And it is my conviction that silence is the audience speaking back to you. It really is. It's them telling you, go on, keep going. And it's an encouraging thing. It is. It happens during performance. It happens during speeches. You know those moments when somebody's speaking and they just drop like this amazing bomb, like this beautiful piece of knowledge, and just everyone's like silent. They're in awe. I know I've heard things that left me like that. And in a way that's you speaking back to the performer, the speaker, the what have you. And I feel alive when I'm playing these pieces of music or performing for crowds or doing whatever, you know. And when I say crowds, it's not necessarily like this big, crazy, like stadium type playing. It's usually like playing for 30 people at my church or like, you know, playing for a small group of friends, like five or six people, you know, in a garage or in a parking lot. And it's just, or playing for the family at Christmas, like, it's all performance, it's all music, and it's all communication, and it makes me feel alive. That's definitely an activity that makes me feel alive. I love creating in that way. It's my favorite thing. Also, creating content, I'm not going to lie. I do feel pretty alive when I do that. Making the YouTube videos, editing them, you know, recording podcasts, like, doing things like this. It brings me the greatest joy. It's the thing that I love most in the world. I've been creating content since I was 21 years old, and I'm 27 now. And yeah, I've had my trial and errors and my successes and my tribulations, and it's mostly been failures, don't get me wrong. But every single one of it is worth it because I like doing this for this. And yeah, I'd like to make money off it one day for sure. But the feeling of creating, that makes me feel alive. I'm sure it makes other people feel alive too. Oh, guys, the timing on this is immaculate. Can we just? All right, guys, that's four topics. And let's go ahead and do the last topic. This is the last one of the day, right? That was four? One, two, three, four. Yeah, it was four. This is five. Okay, this is five right here. Okay, last topic, guys, and we'll close out the very first episode of the podcast. If you could have a fictional superhero for a best friend, who would it be? Excellent. All right, timer started. Doctor Strange, for sure. Like, that's not even a question. Like, Doctor Strange would be a great, like, a great friend. And here's what I mean by that. I know he's, like, kind of a jackass with Wan, and I know that he's, like, very arrogant in a lot of senses, but I think it'd be fun to be friends with him just because I find the superpower so fascinating. Like, he draws power from the other dimensions in the MCU. Like, he draws power from the multiverse. Like, he is the Sorcerer Supreme, the master of the mystic arts. Like, these things are so interesting, like, to me, and they align with, like, my own curiosities of life, that I would for sure be friends with that guy just so I can learn his ways, you know? I would be, for those of you that have seen the Doctor Strange movie, like, I would be very much like him, on my knees, just like he was in front of the Ancient One, and being like, teach me, you know? Like, it's just, I think it's so cool. Like, that superpower of the mystic arts, it's something that really aligns with, like, me in my own curiosities of life. So I think that would be a really, really cool superhero to befriend. Other ones, which would be interesting. The Scarlet Witch. I mean, I know she kind of went off the wire in Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness, and she definitely went a little unhinged in WandaVision. For anyone that hasn't watched those, it doesn't necessarily spoil anything, but I highly recommend that you watch those because the Scarlet Witch's story is amazing. Yeah, I'd want to be friends with the Scarlet Witch solely because Elizabeth Olsen is the one who plays her, and I think she's gorgeous. Hardcore celebrity crush. Plus, the power of the Scarlet Witch, along with Doctor Strange, they are slightly different, but they kind of both pull from this interdimensional reality type superpowers that I find super interesting. So yeah, I think that would be really, really cool because then they'd be my best friend. I would learn about them, you know? Who else? I think Bruce Banner as a friend would be, like, actually a really cool dude. Like, I think he'd actually be a good friend. Like, he just seems like a down-to-earth dude. I'd probably prefer him as Professor Hulk as opposed to just the, you know, unhinged Hulk that occurs before we see him in Avengers Endgame. But yeah, I think Professor Hulk would be, he'd be a great friend, you know? You guys could go out and eat mountains of food together, and you guys would chill and talk about science or watch funny movies, you know? I feel like he has a personality that would enjoy the things of the Earth world a little more than any of the other Avengers who consistently try to leave it, which I get. Scarlet Witch's sister, I think her name's Yelena. That sounds right. Yelena. I don't know, you guys probably remember more than I do, but if any of you watched Hawkeye, you get to meet and kind of hang out with Black Widow's sister, who is played by Florence Pugh, great actress. And her and Hailee Steinfeld, they have a lot of scenes together, and her personality is just so funny. Like, Yelena's sort of ability to have, like, this goofy banter with anyone that she meets and be incredibly relatable and likable, even though she's, like, this crazy Black Widow assassin. Like, she can kill anyone, but she's relatable with anybody, which probably is part of the training now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, I think it's just, I think it'd be funny to be friends with her because she would teach you how to fight and how to be like an assassin. And she would just constantly be making jokes and being sarcastic all the time. And that's something that definitely aligns with my personality too. Of course, there is a limit to sarcasm. Man, I felt like I just heard everyone disagree with me through space-time continuum. But anyway, yeah, I think that would be a really funny superhero best friend. Who else? I know there are other superhero best friends that I could definitely have. Oh, Barry Allen, The Flash. He would be a good friend. He'd be funny. I feel like I utilized the super speed that he had in, like, a very comedic way. Like, I'd be like, all right, Barry, this is what you're going to do. This is what's going to happen today. We're going to have a race. And he's going to be like, Richard, I'm going to beat you. And I'm like, no. We're going to have a race. You are to rob every bank in the world and put all of the money back into all of the banks before tripping an alarm. And you are to do this twice. Now, here's the race. If I can go to the In-N-Out down the street and get myself a burger and take the first bite before you do that, you win. And then I would drive down the street to In-N-Out, and he will be sitting there with an iPhone on the table and two burgers ordered, one of them halfway eaten that he's eating, and the other one's for me. And he'll just be like, take a seat. I'd be like, there's no way you just did all that. And he would just point to the iPhone. And I would pick it up, and I would look at the footage, and he'd be like, you have to slow it down. I'd be like, God, for the love of God. And I'd slow down the footage, and I'd see him rob every single bank, put all the money back twice, and him take and make himself an In-N-Out burger and sit down right there in the chair before I'd made it down the street to do so. I just think things like that would be funny. Like, how funny would that be? Like, to just play games like that with your superhero best friends. Like, games that you know you're inevitably going to lose, but they're just going to be fun for the sake of playing a game, you know? Anyway, who else would be a good superhero friend? See, I want to say Batman, but I feel like that'd be kind of a buzzkill at parties. It'd be like, it'd be a little strange. It'd be a little strange. Like, if you brought Batman to, like your birthday party, or like you guys went to the club, and obviously it's Batman as Bruce Wayne. I feel like it'd just be dark, you know? Like, I love Batman as much as the next guy, but like, it would be dark, you know? And he's a superhero, technically. I feel like we could also have supervillains as best friends, but I don't think we'd live very long if that was the case. Oh, Spider-Man. How did I not say Spider-Man? Everyone just rolled their eyes right now. Like, I can hear it. Spider-Man would be the greatest superhero best friend ever. He's like, he's a kid. Like, you guys would just do kid stuff together. Like, it'd be so fun. Like, you could literally go hit up the movies. Like, you could go see, like, a movie together. You could go to a concert. Like, you can hit up the coffee shop or get some tea or boba. Like, you go to a burger place and both of you would enjoy it, you know? But then he'd also do things to mess around. Like, he would, like, we would be lifting, we'd go to the gym, quote unquote. And it's like, I would be lifting weights on, like, which would just be like these 10, 15 pound dumbbells. And he'd be lifting like two giant trucks, one in each hand. And we'd just be looking at each other being like, go, another rep. And it would be hilarious. Like, how funny would that be? Also, Jack from The Incredibles would be just pure chaos. And I think that'd be hilarious. Boom. All right, guys, that concludes 5 topics. Let's take a quick review of all the topics. Let's see. This is not in order, but what is your favorite quote from a movie? That was a good one. What activity has made you feel most alive? Also a good one. Why do people actually respect people when they die? That one, we just went straight into the deep end right off the bat. But, you know, it's the way the show goes. What is your biggest cooking disaster? That was a good one. Those are funny stories. If you could have a fictional superhero for a best friend, who would it be? Boom. Those are the 5 topics chosen from a hat, guys. Now, these will officially be removed. The only way they'll make it back inside the hat is if another person decides to write those down and submit it into the hat, whether it be a friend or a family member, or you yourself can submit a topic. And there's an easy way to do that. Write a review, since we don't actually have like a comment section when it comes to podcasts. Write a review on the podcast. Leave a 5-star review. Help your boy out. You know, we'll grow the podcast together. But write a review. You know, hit 5 stars, write a review. And in your review, leave the topic. Like, just put like topic, colon, and then write it out. And I will write out whatever you put word for word onto a piece of paper, fold it up, and I'll throw it into the hat and mix it all up. And I think that'll be perfect. And we'll just add to this hat and, you know, we'll get more and more topics to talk off the cuff. Anyway, guys, that's going to be the wrap up for the very first episode. If you made it all the way to the end, thank you so much for listening. Like, I really appreciate you being here from the beginning all the way to the end. Like, it's really, really amazing. And it warms my heart to know that you enjoy the content enough and that you enjoy the ride and the journey to be along for it. But anyway, next week, I'm going to have my brother Michael and my best friend Jacob be on the show. So we're going to have a couple people talking off the cuff. I'll pull from the hat and all of us will discuss that one topic, exchanging stories and telling things that we know about that particular topic. And I'm also going to have them add to the hat in themselves as well. So this could be pretty funny because Michael likes to troll quite a bit with his comedy and his memes. He's been nicknamed the meme master by quite a few people. So I'm interested to know how that plays out when I give him the free rein to put any topic he wants into a hat, and we have to talk about it for 10 minutes. Anyway, guys, I really hope you liked the first episode. Thank you so much for sticking around. Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast, leave or write a review, and please share it with another person. I really, really would love to see this grow and to see many people come on here and just have a good time, talk about different topics off the cuff. Anyway, guys, once again, my name's Richard Lando, and I really appreciate you listening. Have a great day.